Last November's flipping of the Kentucky House of Representatives to Republican control has historic implications, since that legislative body had not been in control of the GOP for almost a century. There has been quite a bit of activity during this so-called short session of the General Assembly, including a rush during the first week that even included a rare weekend session. The new Speaker of the Kentucky House, Jeff Hoover, and President of the Senate, Robert Stivers, take time out of their busy legislative session to join us in the Capitol for our yearly live show from Frankfort. We're interested in your questions, comments, or personal stories. Write to us by email right now, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. You can post a comment to the WEKU Facebook page or the website as well, or send a tweet at WEKUEST. In just a little while, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard, right after the latest news from NPR. From the State Capitol Annex in Frankfort, Kentucky, this is Eastern Standard. I'm John Hingsbergen for WEKU. And during this year's General Assembly session in Frankfort, we are here, as we have been for the last number of years, with folks to talk about what is happening in Frankfort. Our plan was to have with us Speaker of the House, the new Speaker of the House, Jeff Hoover, as well as Senate President Robert Stivers. At the moment, Mr. Hoover has become detained, I guess, or occupied in some other matter. But we do have with us Senate President Robert Stivers. President Stivers, thank you for being with us once again.
Glad to be here, John.
This is at least the third time we've had an opportunity to talk. And there have been some big changes around here since we last spoke. The House Speaker is a different House Speaker because of what has been widely referred to as flipping the House to the Republican Party. Now in Frankfort, Republicans are in control of the Senate, the House, and of course the governor's office. Talk a little bit about that situation and how that is working out for you. You've been Senate President for what, about 3 or 4 years?
Since 2013.
Okay, this would be the fifth year.
True. It's an interesting dynamic. We have a lot more conversations naturally with the former governor. He spoke with me quite often. Didn't have the conversations until the end of the session with then Speaker Stumbo. But now we have regular meetings to discuss where we are, what issues, what commonality there is between the positions of the House, the positions of the Senate, the positions of the governor. So it is much different dynamic from that perspective. Some things we agree on, some things we conceptually agree on, some of the detail we have to work out. And I think that's where Speaker Hoover is right now. There are various things that are down in their House that in their new role, they are learning and becoming accustomed to look at the nuances and the details, unlike they've had to do ever before. So it is a new role for them and is much different, and they're having to spend a lot more time than we are, just because of the nature of the circumstances and our experience in the roles we have.
This year is the year known as the short session. Can you describe for us, for our listeners who don't understand how this whole process works? There's a long session. That's the year when the budget, the biennial budget, is reviewed and approved. And then the short session, what does all that mean?
When I first came in, we didn't have annual sessions. We had biennial sessions every other year, and we always did a two-year budget. In 2000, that changed with the constitutional amendment, so now we meet every year. In the odd-numbered years, which is this year, we come in for 30 working days. In that, we are to organize our caucuses and leaderships and our committees because an election has just occurred. And so we come in the first part of January, and by constitution, we're to be out after working our 30 days by March 30th. We do not have a budget. Any budget items have to have a supermajority to have a vote to open it up. In the odd-numbered years, we do the budget. We come in the same time, the first Tuesday after the first Monday, but we have until April 15th in which to get that done with 60 working days. So that's the difference. But the biggest thing, I think, is the difference of not having a budget, because still a lot of bills are coming here, and the volume of bills related to the number of days is almost the same when you think about the percentage of days versus the percentage of filings.
The first week of the session this year was a very, very busy and active week. And we haven't had an opportunity to talk about that, but of course, there's been a lot of news coverage about, was it a total of seven?
Seven bills.
That were passed by the House and the Senate, agreement there across the board, with, I assume there were some issues of some negotiating that had to be done between the two bodies, and then signed by the governor. Can you review for me again what those bills were? There was a right-to-work legislation, there were some...
prevailing wage, repeal of prevailing wage, and many of the university presidents, since we're on WEKU, I think, have even talked about how the repeal of prevailing wage will save them thousands, if not millions, of dollars. But that allows the market...
That's for contracting related to capital projects.
It is allowing the market to set the wage on capital construction projects, not an artificially set wage. And it basically increased the costs in some cases anywhere from 7.5% to 10% over what you would do in the private sector. Right to work, that's been an economic development recruitment tool of the Senate and the Republicans for many years, that the states who have right to work get about a third bigger opportunity or pool of people that want to be looking at them for the purpose of retaining or expanding or creating new jobs in a state. So those were the two big economic development bills that came out of one economic, one just a process bill to save taxpayers' dollars that came out of the first part of the session. There were several other bills, what we consider more the social conservative bills, and a few other things like that. But I think those are the two from the business perspective that were individuals were really looking at.
There were a couple of bills related to abortion and the prohibition of abortion beyond a certain term of a pregnancy, as well as...
20 weeks.
20 weeks.
Exactly. 20 weeks. And, you know, there was a lot of discussion about that, but banning abortions. Now, I'm one that believes and has a very conservative opinion, but 20 weeks, if there hasn't been an abortion performed at that time, even though I wouldn't want one at that time, but that's what we believe we could keep and withstand judicial scrutiny. So that's where we went to, was to anything after 20 weeks, we would ban that unless it affects the life of the mother. Now, there's been questions about, you know, what happens prior to 20 weeks. The standard still stays the same.
And the other, there was another matter of affecting abortion clinics. Was it about the approval or the requirements?
Ultrasound
requirement,
yeah,
okay.
That you have to go through and make sure that the individuals understand and that there is full knowledge when an abortion is performed, and that's what that related to.
And, I mean, since then, I guess one clinic in Lexington, I apologize for the microphone that is slipping down in front of you, President. I need to get a screwdriver and tighten that up a little bit here. But
is that yours or ours?
That's mine. And I usually have a screwdriver handy.
Tell President Benson to get you a little more money for the microphones.
He's been very good to us, actually. One of the abortion clinics in Kentucky has closed, so there's now only one remaining abortion clinic, I guess, in Louisville.
I don't think that had anything to do with the bills that we passed the first. That is something through regulation and the ability to contain that by a regulatory process that was done.
So what else has been passed? And there's some that are almost procedural matters, some that are related to business and the economy of Kentucky. There's the matter of the performance-based funding for universities and colleges.
Certain things like performance-based funding have passed the Senate, or other issues have passed the House and come to the Senate. Two of the bigger issues are what we call the pension transparency bills. So everybody has heard that the pension problems in the state are great. Maybe that's an understatement. They may be huge. But we want to be able to see and show everybody why there are problems with the pension system, and we have been denied access to that for years and years and years. So we're going to be able to show people what the problems are and some of the abuses that took place, even by legislators, about how they supersized pensions to create problems in the pension systems, which was not appropriate, that individuals that were here in the past actually tried to block. And we truly, the Senate has been trying to do this for years, and now that we have people of like minds and philosophy, we got those passed in the early part of this session. But there are still bills in transit. that I call in transit that have passed the Senate that now the House will start focusing on. As the House passes bills, the Senate will start to focus on.
And again, this session will be finished by March 30th, and there's a period of time during which there's the potential for the governor to sign or veto, and then to come back to review.
I think what you're trying to get is the sequence in the calendar, what we call
sure.
that. We have a period of time which we will try to complete all the bills that the Senate will review that are House bills and Senate bills that the House will review. And if there is any difference in them, then we will conclude our days of passing those bills, then go into what we call concurrence days, to where we will try to work out the differences between our bodies, and then do what we call, and that's done through a conference committee. That conference committee will then report back to both chambers. If we can resolve our differences, we will then have votes, and then they will be sent to the governor. We will then adjourn for a 10 working day period to allow the governor to review all the bills that we have passed. And if he wants to veto them, then we can come back the 29th and 30th of March, our constitutionally last days, and then consider veto overrides.
And last year was a unique situation with the budget where I guess the House and the Senate agreed to...
In the very last days, and we had no ability to override vetoes.
Okay.
And that's not been an unusual circumstance. We, on budget years, that has been quite common, that on our last constitutional day, we've reached an agreement on a budget, leaving both Republican and Democrat governors with unfettered discretion to veto in total or line item veto budget materials, because the governor has the power in the budget to line item veto, unlike in other bills he has to veto in total or not.
Are there any matters this year where the governor may not be in agreement with the bills that will be passed by the House and the Senate?
That's a good question. I don't know. There's been a few that he's expressed concern, and I think what happens is when the final product is there, because a bill that comes from the House, we can amend and correct potential problems the governor has, or vice versa. But then there are also things I'm sure the legislature is going to do that we don't want to conform to the governor's belief. We are a separate independent branch of government, and we are going to have our separate and distinct opinions. But on most issues, because of our philosophies and backgrounds, we're going to be in agreement on.
Help me with the numbers again in terms of Democrats versus Republicans on board. Previously, the Democrats were the majority in the House before this year. But
the Senate has been strongly Republican since the mid-2000s, and now we're at 27-11, supermajority plus. 23 is a 60%, which is a supermajority. The House went to 64-36, which is a supermajority as well, because a 60% rule there. So it moved 17 positions in this last electoral cycle.
So and if you're able to stay with us past the station break here, Senate President Robert Stivers, we're continuing with this week's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Our program is an interactive show. If you have a question for President Stivers, get it in now, because I know he's going to have to rush off, and we're going to have to change players here. About 10 minutes, good. So we'll take a short break, but we're going to ask you to send us an email to WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com, send a tweet at WEKU EST, or give us a call, 800-621-8890. We'd be glad to get you on the air live, 800-621-8890. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen, and we are live from the State Capitol Annex with Senate President Robert Stivers, who is going to be with us for another 10 minutes or so, and we'll be talking to a couple of other of our legislators here in Frankfort. This is our annual visit to the State House, and we do want to welcome to the microphone, this is Representative Chad McCoy.
Good morning, yes, sir.
From the 50th District, Nelson County. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We're going to keep the president here for another 10 minutes or so, and we'll get back with you in just a few moments. But President Stivers, we're talking about, to a great extent, the process of making law on the state level. One of the things that was unusual this year, you said it was not unusual that you would end up with a little time for a review of vetoes and so forth, but there was an unusual weekend session early in this General Assembly session. What was the hurry? What was the rush to get all that work done during that first week?
Well, I want to go back and talk a little bit about the process. The governor and I had actually started talking about this back in October, not knowing what the political outcome and fate of any party or any individual would be, and depending on the numbers, what we would do, depending on what those numbers and ratios were. So immediately upon seeing that, we started having discussions with Jeff Hoover, who was the presumptive leader of the House, and we planned about what bills we thought we could get through and get done quickly to make a strong statement that there was a new day. So when we adopted our calendar, we had 4 days, but that doesn't stop us from amending the calendar. So we looked through it, we worked with the House about various issues, and then knew that if we could have bills, what I say, crisscross in the process, knowing that by Constitution you have to have at least 5 days to constitutionally pass a bill, that if they could crisscross on Thursday, we wanted to go ahead and finish the process that week, amending our calendar and bringing everybody back in on Saturdays, because by Constitution and rulings of the court, there's only 2 days we can't meet, holidays and Sundays. So we amended our calendar, brought it back in, and made a strong statement that there's a new day in Frankfort.
And I was wondering if that was not part of the rationale. You wanted to make a point that Republicans were in control of both houses, as well as the governor's office, and that business was going to get done efficiently and quickly.
And that we not only control this, but we were doing things to say to the business community, not just in this state, but in the United States and internationally, we're going to be ready to help you work on business ideas, create new opportunities, and expand our jobs base.
We do have a couple of calls on the line, and I told folks to get on the line quickly if they wanted to speak with Senate President Robert Stiver. So let's go ahead and talk to, on line five, Mark from Lexington, who should be on the line. Mark, are you there? Hello, Mark.
Hello?
Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Thanks. You're on the air with Senate President Robert Stiver. Go right ahead.
Yeah, so my question regards this new bill allowing religion to be taught in the schools. And I was wondering exactly what religion and what versions of these religions. It seems to me as if it indeed passes constitutional muster, that it raises a whole set of issues that I think that the state would rather avoid.
And actually, Senator, it's Bible being taught in the schools, correct? Not necessarily religion as such, right?
Well, there's various bills that have been filed in both the House and the Senate, so I'm not particularly sure which one he is talking about. We had one issue that came out of the Senate that clarified what individuals could do about prayer, and it wasn't relegated preferred any one religion. I think Senator Robinson had that, and that's down in the House. But I'm uncertain as to which bill, because there's several that are out there. I don't know if Representative McCoy, if they've dealt with that in the House.
Yes, Mr. President. We did pass out of the House a bill that would allow regulations to be promulgated that would have the Bible taught as a cultural, social, historical, looking at its impact on society. It was very clear that it was not a teaching of any sort of religion.
And that would be a House bill, and I appreciate Representative McCoy talking about that, because that is not one we have focused on yet, but that's when I said, you know, we'll start focusing on House bills as they will start focusing on Senate bills.
Which version?
So yeah, Mark is at. Mark is wondering what version of religion, which version of the Bible, you know, and you know, because there are so many different translations.
Yes, sir, Mark, and that was a great question. We actually debated that on the House floor, and I think the thought was it would be left open to local control. This is not going to be. This is an elective course. It was just simply to make it available so that people wouldn't be worried about the constitutional issues if they were teaching any version of the Bible. So that'll be handled at the local level.
All right, Mark, thank you so much. What about the Quran? What about the scriptures of other religions?
You know, again, that was part of the debate. And in the way this bill was drafted, it focused only on what would be considered, I guess, the Christian Bible, because it included the New Testament as well. And again, not a religion at all, looking at its impact culturally, socially. How has it affected the life in the United States, basically.
Mark, thank you for raising that question. We do need to move on. We have just a few minutes remaining with President Stiver. So let's see if we have time to get Todd from Redlick on the air. He was on line six, I'm told. Todd, are you there?
Yeah.
Sure, Todd. Go right ahead.
I had a question for Mr. Stiver about the right to work bill, and really just how that's kind of, it just seems like that's such a misleading title for a bill. I live in Charleston, South Carolina, and the same thing happened there. It sounds like it's for the, you know, for people have the ability to have access to work and all of that, but the truth of the matter is it takes a lot of the rights away from, you know, the working people. And it really gives way too much power to the individual employer, and I'm an employer myself. I have employees, but it just seems like people should really look into the language of the bill and the law and where it really puts them in relation to having that stability at work, and why that my question is why that, I guess really, why would you label a bill that just seems so misleading? When he talks about the other states that have had a history with this, and most states, they implement the law, and then they spend years trying to tear it back down, and they do eventually.
Okay, Todd, thanks. Are you concerned about the nomenclature, just the naming, calling it right to work, or is it?
I have no problem with this, and what this does is mean that you just can't have individuals mandated to be involved in a union negotiation and union pay scale if they don't want to be.
Right to work refers to the ability to work without having to be
involved in a union.
With a union.
And if they do, if they want to be in a union, then everybody has the right to lobby and solicit and join a union. But we knew from various things that we have been told in working with other states and what they call site locators, that these individuals would tell us that when you have a room of 100 businesses that want to locate somewhere else or expand, one of the first questions they're going to ask you is, are you a right to work state? If you are not, then you lose anywhere from 30 to 40 of those potential people, and your pool of opportunity shrinks.
Senator Robert Stivers, President Robert Stivers, I know you said you need to move on to another meeting. What is your priority in these next couple of weeks here, how many days remaining in this General Assembly session? What is most important to you from your own personal agenda or for the point of view of the Senate and the Republican majority in the Senate?
Well, first of all, I think we have accomplished many of our initial goals, and whether we pass another bill or not, which I know we will, the first week was such a success that this session will be defined as a success. We want to finish out strong. There are several things that came over to us from the House that we've hoped to continue to work on, basically changing the business climate and then setting this up to do serious pension reform in the future months. That's, I think, our ultimate goal, because our single biggest problem is dealing with our unfunded pension liabilities.
All right. Senate President Robert Stivers, thank you once again for being
thank
with
you.
Us.
Thank you. And I know I'm ably leaving with this in the hands of Representative McCoy.
All right. And thank you. And pass our regards to Speaker Hoover. And we'll make sure that we touch base with him at a later time. Chad McCoy, a representative of the 50th District, I understand, first elected, what, in 20?
This year.
This year, you're a freshman.
I'm one of the newbies. Yes, sir.
Tell me more about you personally. I know a little about you. I know you are a Republican representing Nelson County.
Correct. And I'm in Bardstown is my hometown. I'm an attorney there. My wife's a local doc, got a couple kids, and David Floyd had the seat prior to me. He was also a Republican, so we ended up with a nice friendly transfer here. He had other things to move on to, and it's just been very exciting. I can't tell you how neat it's been.
Well, coming from the perspective of someone new to the General Assembly, it would be interesting to hear what you've observed. Have you been in elected office prior to this position?
No, sir. Never had any involvement in politics in my life.
Well, how did this all come about?
Well, one of those things you say you're never going to do, and next thing you know, you're doing it. Some folks had approached me about running. I think actually David Floyd himself was looking to retire. He didn't want to retire so soon, but he had some personal things happen after I jumped in the ring. So here I find myself doing it. It's been unbelievable. more enjoyable than I ever thought, and certainly more work than I think I would have anticipated on the front end.
Are you an attorney? What your
yes, sir. Small town. Background? Yeah, small town law.
And what motivated you to run for office? What was on your mind that you wanted to accomplish?
You know, the biggest thing was just being able to get involved in the process. I was at a point in my life where I felt like I could make a difference. And having a legal background, I know folks always say that, you know, we've got too many lawyers involved. But the reality is you need lawyers with a diverse background that can take a look at some of the language in these bills and make sure they're being crafted correctly and taking care of any unintended consequences that might be there.
And let's talk a little bit about what the accomplishments so far that you have seen in this General Assembly, the bills that we were talking with Senate President Stivers about, were any of those priorities for you that you felt were things that you wanted to be able to say to the folks back home in Nelson County that you were part of bringing about?
Absolutely. And, you know, you're always looking to raise the tide for everybody. You know that old phrase, all boats float in a rising tide. And so that's what we wanted to do from the economic standpoint, get the economy going. My county's actually been doing pretty good. So this, if we can get everybody else coming up, it's going to be great. But something else that I've really had an opportunity to work on here has been protecting our kids. I've gotten very active in doing some legislation that's looking at helping kids that are caught up in our criminal justice system or in the dependency, abuse, and neglect system. And there's been a whole lot of change that I think sometimes people aren't focused on because they're looking at what we've done on the economic side. They're not seeing some of the real good that we've done for the kids.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen, and this is our annual visit to the state capitol. We are in the state capitol annex talking with some legislators during kind of in the middle, moving toward the end of the 2017 General Assembly session. And joining us now in our mobile studio is Senator Jared Carpenter from Madison County. You're welcome to stay with us, Representative.
I appreciate it, sir. I have a meeting that I'm already late for. Okay. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And we'll bring in Mr. Kenny Iams in just a second here. But with us now, Senator Jared Carpenter, Republican from Madison County, from Berea. Tell me a little bit about yourself, Senator, and how long have you been in office?
This will be my seventh session.
Wow,
John.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that we have not met before.
I know we haven't crossed paths, and I'm an EKU alum, lived in Berea my entire life, and worked in Richmond at a bank for a long time there.
So practically neighbors.
Practically neighbors, and we didn't even know it. Must have had good fences.
I guess. But as a senator, talk about the accomplishments of this session so far and what you've experienced.
Well, I'm sure Senate President Stivers has already discussed a lot of those, but I think it's been a very successful short session. It doesn't feel like a short session with the amount of things that we've got accomplished so quickly, but I feel very confident that we've done things to help the business community. That's been a huge focus as the leadership has changed in some of the chambers and with the governor. I think we've been able to accomplish some things that we feel confident will make a difference for Kentucky's future.
What is on your agenda, as I was asking the president, in terms of accomplishments for the rest of this session? What's on your mind, or what are you hearing from your constituents back in Madison County and Berea that they want to see done?
Well, typically the main focus for my community, who's kind of like Representative McCoy's district, has been pretty prosperous. We've been very fortunate that our industry base is doing extremely well, and we're continuing to see job growth. My constituents want us to make sure we continue to work with our education to make sure we provide quality education opportunities for our youth, to make sure we keep college affordable. With Eastern Kentucky University right there in our community, it makes a huge difference in the economy of our county, of how successful the university is, as well as Berea College. I'm the chairman of Natural Resources and Energy, so, you know, I deal a lot with affordable electricity, affordable rates for consumers, and I think that's been a big part of why Kentucky has been successful with our economy. And I think we're going to continue to work on the issues that address that. And so, you know, in a short amount of time left, I think we've got several key issues, and lots of them are education-related and economic drivers that are going to make Kentucky's future brighter. And I think the next few weeks are going to go very quickly, and it's going to be a high-speed, high pace.
Joining us at the table now, as I mentioned a moment ago, is Representative Kenny Imes, representing District 5, Trigg County. Mr. Imes, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you. I'm also half Callaway County, which is the home of Murray State, and I couldn't agree more with the Senator's previous comments as far as our interest in education and from that standpoint.
We just met one of the freshmen, one of the newer members of the General Assembly, Chad McCoy, a few moments ago, and you're one who's been around for a little while. I understand that you were first elected to the House in 1972 and served for 7 or 8 years in there and then just came back on board?
Pretty much so. I served in 72. I was, I think, the youngest member ever elected to the General Assembly. I was quite young at the constitutional age. Served then, served 4 terms, then worked as a deputy secretary for Governor Carroll and Governor Brown in the Natural Resource Environmental Protection Agency, as it was called then. It's now Energy and Cabinet, but dealt with those issues.
I'd be interested in your observations on how the process of making law in Kentucky has changed over those years, and of course, as a Republican, how that scene has changed from a state where it was primarily Democratic control, I assume, in those days of the 1970s, and now it is complete Republican control.
Well, that is true. I mean, when I first came here, I think in 1974, there were like 81 Democratic members of the House and 19 Republicans, and we're now we have the supermajority. So it's changed dramatically, and especially in West Kentucky. I think the first time I ran, Callaway County was like 14-1 Democrat. It's down, it's still about 2-1 Democrat, but you see those changes. But as far as the session in and of itself, I think you see that we are working, going back to the 70s versus now. I mean, pretty much the governor at that time, whomever they were, had tremendous influence over the legislation that was passed, where I think you see the legislature extremely independent and working for their individual constituents as well as a group of issues that have been laid out earlier.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, and with us right now, we're in Frankfort at the State Capitol Annex. I'm John Hingsbergen. Representative Kenny Imes is with us, and Senator Jared Carpenter. You both able to stay for a while with us here? We're going to take a station break.
Yeah, I can stay for a few minutes.
And we're going to come back and hopefully interact with some listeners. We do have lines open at 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. Send us an email. We do have an email that I want to get to here that has been waiting for us to get on the air from a listener named Sharon. Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, or send a tweet at WEKUEST. We'll be right back. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen, live at the State Capitol Annex in Frankfort. And we're talking with some of the folks who make laws for the Commonwealth of Kentucky every year for the last, this is the 3rd year that we've done so. We've made a visit over here during the General Assembly session to talk with some of the representatives and the senators. And our original plan was to have House Speaker Jeff Hoover and Senate President Robert Stivers for the entire hour. And everything was all set up, but the nature of some have referred to it as sausage making has caused them to both be pulled away. But we do have with us at the moment Representative Kenny Imes and Senator Jared Carpenter. And we're interested in hearing from you, our listeners. Let me toss out to you all this question. And interested in your response from a listener. Let's see, this one is from Kathleen, and she writes to us, "The legislative session has been as bad as I expected with Republicans in control. It seems to me that Mr. Stivers and Mr. Hoover are leading a group of lawmakers who seem intent on dragging Kentucky to the bottom." She says, "Right to work isn't a reason why companies move to a state. Companies seek to move to a state based on the educational background of workers. And can workers pass a drug test? Can Mr. Stivers and Mr. Hoover, who are not here, of course, address the lack of educational attainment in this state as well as the inability of a large subset of potential employees to pass a drug test. She goes on with another issue, but let me get a reaction to the question of the right to work.
Well, we appreciate her question, but you know, it's kind of funny how sometimes folks lose sight that this over the last 100 years and over the past election cycles that Democrats have ruled here in the state capitol, John, as you well know. And so a lot of the issues that we're having has come from the mindset and the affiliation that and the philosophy that party has kind of played forward and some of the business aspects that they've laid out. And so, you know, I think that that's why the people in the Commonwealth and across the nation have kind of changed some of their beliefs and who they want to be in office to give another affiliation, another party, a chance to do that. You know, we've been in control in the Senate, but when you're one leg of a three-legged stool, it's hard to really make a lot of change. And I think that if she'll be patient and allow us to the same courtesy that she's allowed the other folks to make those decisions, I think she's going to see that it's going to be a very positive for us. I think that right to work will create opportunity. I'm totally with her that we have a huge drug epidemic, and we've tried to address that. My first year here, it was the pill mill, and we tried to pass legislation that was making a difference and making it harder for pill mills. We've done that. The unfortunate part is now we've opened the doors for heroin. We didn't do that as a legislative body, but the drug dealers, the drug pushers have, and the addicts who are always looking for the next high have allowed those folks to come into our area. And so we're trying to address that issue now by making more different penalties on heroin traffickers. We're trying to do everything we can because in my community in Madison County, which I assume that's where she lives, the folks who are running our industrial parks and managing our facilities say that they have opportunities for work, but they can't find people that aren't on some type of drug. And so we're trying to do everything we can now as a leadership body, as this body that we have, the three legs of this stool, to make a difference. And I think if she'll be patient and give us the same time that the other folks have had, that she'll see a positive difference.
The other question that listener Kathleen raised, and I'm sorry I don't know the specific bill numbers that she's referring to, SB7, that would be a Senate bill, and House Bill 316. How is the Commonwealth made safer when essentially anybody can have access to a gun without checks and balances? So I assume it's related to open, or is this a concealed carry? One of these was a concealed carry bill?
Senate Bill 7 is a concealed carry bill. And there was, you know, there's been some questions raised with that bill, and it's not moved out of the process now, but we're still continuing to research it. But that's what that bill is she's talking about discussing is, but it's not moved forward at this time.
But I guess she may be referring to the fact that in general, Republicans tend to be opposed to controls on gun ownership.
Sure, and I've been an advocate for a gun. I'm a card carrying concealed weapons person, and you know I think that the legal law abiding citizen that carries a gun is not the ones that we're having trouble with. It's once again, it's the folks who are carrying guns illegally. It's got illegal intent. This bill would not help those folks any at all. It would protect people who are law abiding citizens, and I think sometimes people lose perception of who we're trying to protect. You can't change what a criminal is going to do because they're not following the law anyways. This is about protecting people who want to protect themselves and their family and their personal property.
Senator Jared Carpenter here with us. Representative Kenny Imes, any comments on these issues we've just raised?
Well, no, I would only add that like Senator, I'm a CC DW carrier also. My wife is. All of our children are adult children. And I fully support the Second Amendment. I think most people do in its literal interpretation of it. So I think you will see while there are bills for just open carry without any license, which I think constitutionally is probably correct. I do think probably the concealed carry permitting process is a process that is sort of the best we can do and keep the intent and be able to protect our lives and our families as we go about our business each and every day.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, and on this Thursday morning, we are live at the State Capitol Annex, and with me I'm John Hingsberg, and with me are Representative Kenny Imes and State Senator Jared Carpenter. You are welcome to jump on board with a question. We'd appreciate it if you'd like to get on the line and interact with us live by calling 800-621-8890. What do you think about the legislative action so far? What do you think about the fact that the House flipped from Democratic control to Republican control in November? Do you think that the lawmaking in Kentucky is a more efficient process now as a result? We are interested in your questions, your comments at 800-621-8890. Of course, you can email us, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. And this is a question that had been emailed in before the program, gentlemen. This came from Sharon. And she asks, she again was referring to Senate President Stivers and Speaker of the House, Hoover. She says, you each cite the percentage of women among members of your respective chambers. Do you think the pathetically low numbers are a problem? If not, why not? If so, what specifically are you doing to recruit women to run for office, support women who are running, and ensure that women who are in the state House and Senate have opportunities to move into leadership positions? I'll open that up a little bit more into, in general, a representative of women and minorities. And, you know, how do you all feel? Again, you know, this is once again a gathering of white men as we gather around the microphones here. How do you feel about the diversity in the General Assembly in Kentucky? Sure, Senator Carpenter.
You know, I think that our party and our group is definitely open and welcoming to everybody that has our beliefs. And, you know, we have a tremendous we have great leadership with a couple of chairmen that are women in our party. And in the Senate, Senator Julie Rocky Adams is chairman of Health and Family Services, does an excellent job from Louisville. Senator Alice Forgy Kerr is Tourism Economic Development. She's the chairman of that committee, does an excellent job. So those ladies have done excellent jobs in providing leadership. And, you know, we're very supportive of any person, minority, or any person else that's interested in running and being a part of this process, because that's who we're representing. We're representing the constituents of our district.
And Representative Imes, I know you were first here 45 years ago. I assume a lot has changed in the diversity of the representation since then.
It has indeed, and just like Senator Carpenter was saying, you know, in the House, we have Representative Wunschner is head of our committee on health and family services, and Senator Marie Rader, who's been a little bit ill this session, is chairman of the Transportation Committee. I mean, the Transportation Committee is one of the biggest committees in the House. So I think overall the House has been very well represented by both parties with women and the diversity that we have, especially in the House. We have several Democratic women that represent their respective districts. As far as changing, I mean, the people that run for office are elected by their constituency. So, I mean, there's not a whole lot we can do to promote that, because each candidate, we would just encourage any candidate of any color or any gender, you know, philosophically that believes as we do, you know, to join the ranks and you know, run for office. I mean, that's just what it takes. It takes that commitment. It takes that commitment of time. And fortunately, I think we are very blessed in the Kentucky House with the number of women, minorities that we have represented. I think it's a good cross section of Kentucky on both party sides.
And there are races, not necessarily for the General Assembly, but every once in a while there will be a position that is without a candidate. I guess if a person wants to get involved and become politically active, there are ways to get involved and do so in your local community and eventually at the state level.
Absolutely. I think you're seeing a society now that people are wanting to be engaged in the process. I, for one, none of my family had ever run for public office. I had never run for public office before I filed to run for the state Senate seat that I have now. And so, once again, I ran as one of the younger you're members in the Senate. You have to be 30, I think, to be a senator. I was 31 at the time, 32 after I got elected. And so and I was just another person that believed that you needed to have folks engaged in the process that hadn't been engaged in the process that are business people in our community. So, you know, I think we have if you look in the Senate and in the House, we have a tremendous amount of young people that's engaged in the process, and I think that's very exciting. Representative Imes has been here on and off different times, and I think his history and his understanding and of what the Capitol is and the concepts of what our goal is, I think that dynamic is very important, and I think it's good to have a mixture. And I think you're seeing that the Republican Party, honestly, has really got a tremendous amount of young folks engaged and active in running for political office.
And I would add to that, very talented people. Senator McCoy, Representative McCoy, that was just here. I mean, you just don't find those quality of people that are willing to step aside from their day-to-day jobs. I mean, we are part-time. We're, you know, essentially paid accordingly. And I don't think a lot of people realize and respect the fact that a lot of people, I mean, I'm fortunate. I'm basically retired, even though I still own part of my businesses. But I'm fortunate that I have the ability, and when I was up here before, I had three small kids at home. I had to go home and make a living, and that's the reason I left and now able to come back. But I think our hearts are pure. We're trying to pass good legislation to create a commonwealth that truly will be the shining star. And I think some of the legislation that we have passed and will be passing will make Kentucky a better place. It will ultimately provide. It's not going to happen overnight. With a lot of the legislation that we have passed, I think if people will give it a little time to see all this coming to pass with the manufacturing industry and the workforce-ready development thing, I mean, we've got to have the people ready and in place through our universities, our technical schools, to be ready for those jobs that we're able to attract from different areas. I know the people have visited Germany several places. We should be the manufacturing hub of this nation before long.
Representative Kenny Imes and Senator Jared Carpenter are with us in the final few minutes of this week's Eastern Standard. We do have a number of callers waiting on the line, so let's see if we can get some of these folks on the air with their questions or their comments. Let's try line five. Mark from I'm obviously calling for the wrong number here. This would be line four. Line four, Jerry from Russell County. We have Jerry on the line there. Hello, Jerry.
Hello?
Yeah, is this Jerry?
Oh, yeah, it's Carrie. Hi.
Carrie. Yes. Yeah. Yes, Carrie.
And
no problem. Thank you.
I believe that Senator Carpenter's district does reach up to the southern areas of Lexington, or at least part of them, so I'm quite sure he's my senator. Anyway, but my concern is really with Senate Bill 8, and I'm no fan of abortion, but when we take away 70 counties' only access to birth control and OBGYN care, even though it may sound good to some voters to defund Planned Parenthood, I'm not sure they realize that in many cases that's going to increase abortion, unfortunately, which is really upsetting. And I think that it just sounds good, but the reality is we just need that women's health care out there for all those women out in those 70 far counties. And none of the state funding went or goes to abortion anyway. So it just really doesn't make any sense. And I just was hoping, I realize it's passed out of the Senate. I'm hoping that Senator Carpenter and Representative McCoy might give some information So, because there are a lot of people really concerned about this, and there are a lot of people who don't really even understand
what
the bill's going to do.
Let's get Senator Carpenter. Representative McCoy had to slip away. We still have Kenny Imes with us as well, though.
Carrie, I probably do have your district. I have all of Madison, southern Fayette County, up to about Hamburg, some of that area, and then Rockcastle County. Appreciate the question, and it's always one that has been of interest. Planned Parenthood, you know, there's lots of folks in Kentucky that do not feel that we should use taxpayer dollars to fund the ability to provide abortions across the board. Women's health is very, very important to us. I have a young little girl that's 6 years old and a son that's 11. And so, you know, we want to make sure that we protect women's health just like anybody else's. But the taxpayers of this area just don't want to see and don't feel that that's the best use of their dollars
to abortion. But it's not going to abortion. But this would shut down their ability to even operate in those 70 counties.
Right, there's still opportunities for folks to get health services now.
Carrie, we need to move on because we've got other callers waiting, and we're almost out of time with this week's
program. I'll be glad for you to send me an email, and I'll be glad to give you more information.
All right, and that information is all online.
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's go quickly. Let's see if we can go to Jerry on line four. Is Jerry there? Are you there, Jerry? Hey, Jerry? I hear noise on the line. Jerry? On line four. Hello. Well, apparently not. Jerry's question was about term limits. You guys, and I know Representative Kenny Imes, you again have served here, but you certainly would not have been affected by term limits. You served for a relatively brief, what, 7-8 years or so originally, and then left and came back. What, you have any opinions about term limits?
I do. I actually have a bill in the legislature to set term limits. The bill calls for 16. I don't care whether it's 16 or 12, but I think we...
Years. That would be years.
Years, mm-hmm. Yes, of consecutive service in that house, and then you could change houses or set out a term and come back. We're not going to do any constitutional amendments this year because there's no election this fall to put them on the ballot, so all of those will wait till next year. But I do have that. But one other point besides the question, I'd like to just mention the tone and tenor of the House over the years and how it has changed so dramatically this year. Everybody has had their turn at the mic. We've had so much rhetoric, you know, I guess for KET or whatever, everybody trying to make their points at home. But I will commend Speaker Hoover in particular for changing the tone of the House that we have been able to, anyone's been able to speak on pretty much any issue they want to. We've not tried to shut down or limit in any way. He uses the gavel very gently. We don't gavel people down and all that. And I've just been so impressed by the way and the manner that the House has been able to conduct itself as opposed to the previous six sessions that I've served in.
Speaking of gaveling people down, we are out of time. And so I'm really grateful for Representative Kenny Imes and Senator Jared Carpenter for being with us for this week's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Of course, the Senate President, Robert Stivers, started off the program with us. We also heard from Representative Chad McCoy of the 50th District, Nelson County. And we appreciate all the listeners who called in. Our producers, associate producers for Eastern Standard are Noah Day and Marissa Hempel. I'm John Hingsberg, and thanks for tuning in.